Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to episode 1 of the Get In Podcast, brought to you by Fourth and Dude. After a long hiatus, we are officially back on the air to talk Boston College football. Week 0 has officially kicked off, and we are just 7 days away from the season opener against Northern Illinois. It's do or die time in Chestnut Hill, with the Eagles coming off a brutal 3-9 year, and Coach Halfley is squarely on the hot seat. On today's episode, we'll recap a busy offseason, preview the 2023 slate, and break down our official season predictions.
Matt, if you asked me after, I don't know, the Rutgers game, certainly after the UConn game, you know, even any time in the last 3 months, if I was going to talk to you again on this podcast, obviously we talk frequently in real life, on this podcast, I would have said absolutely not. I thought we were going to hang up the microphone for good. You've actually lost your microphone, so this is an AirPods game for you, but we're going to play through some adversity. We're back. I think we're optimistic. I wouldn't expect this to last on a weekly basis, but with the hype, I think, that we were all feeling around this program coming into this year, and I think I mean that earnestly, I think it was only right for us to get together and chop it up and try to build some excitement here.
Yeah, the mic went in the dumpster after the Notre Dame game that we were at.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That was at 44-0.
After that,
there was no coming back, and I said, you know what, I've recorded my last BC football podcast, but you know what it is? There's just so much, we've gotten a lot of flack, we've gotten a lot of, you know, messages from folks saying, hey, where's the pod? And I think we agreed, let's do one last ride, and as soon as we lose a game that we shouldn't, we're done. All right, I want to be clear on that, But let's see what happens these first few weeks, man. We'll get into all of it. But excited to be back on the mic, and it should be a fun season. Or it won't be.
Yeah, first and foremost, the losing a game we shouldn't could happen in 6 days and 20 hours or so from now. It's 6 o'clock on Saturday before the season kicks off. I have some concerns about Northern Illinois that we'll talk about. I think generally I have a ton of optimism, as we do every year. But as we also know, that rarely comes to fruition. I think up front, I want to note that this is a historically low-researched year and episode for me. I know you've done a little bit more than I have. I think
in the last 20 minutes, I did some.
The last 20 minutes, you know, as you get a little older, Matt and I are now, you know, we're hitting 32. You know, you have more responsibilities at work, family, whatever it is. It's tough to keep up with a program that consistently lets you down. I think that's, you know, bittersweet in a way. If I can kind of take a step back and talk life, like. The reality is that, Matt, if last season had happened, you know, when you and I were 24 living in the North End together, we lose to Rutgers, we lose to UConn, like the optimism we had with the halfway thing just gone off the rails, like that would have broken us as men. And I think it's a credit to our maturity that we got through last season, and like it sucked. It was terrible. It was probably the most disappointing year that I've had since I became a fan of this team back in 2009. But we got through it, and I think that's the positive aspect of being a little bit disconnected. The downside is that when we talk for the next hour, we're not really going to hit you with X's and O's. What I will say is we got guys like, you know, AJ Black does great X's and O's thing. So if you're looking for that, Boston College fans have an outlet. This is going to be more shooting from the hip, shooting from the heart, and, you know, just talking about our feelings a little bit.
Yeah, and one of the great things about this season, and we'll talk about it, is it can't be any worse than last season. Like last year, well, I guess it could be, technically. We did lose Zay. We'll talk about that. But we went 3-9 last year. The majority of the games weren't even close. You know, one of those wins was over Maine. It was an all-time bad year. And, you know, hopefully it's a wake-up call for the guys. Obviously, we got some skill guys coming in through the portal. Halfley's, you know, got to be kind of giving it his all at this point. He's got to know that this is sort of like do or die, right? If he doesn't have it this year, then, you know, he's certainly probably, I don't want to say he's definitely gone, knowing who's at the helm of you know, Father Leahy, and who knows, you know, what happens. We've seen coaches hang on for years and years when they probably shouldn't. But at a certain point, you know, this is year four, and it's put up or shut up time for Jeff Halfley. So we're all rooting for him, and all we want is for, you know, for us to be a competitive football team again. So with that, let's get into it a little bit, Matt. Before we talk BC, it is officially week zero. And as you mentioned, it's 6 o'clock on a Saturday night. Nice social life for us.
Yeah, our wives
are out of town, so that's why we're able to podcast. So we just wrapped up the Navy Notre Dame game, which was a bit of a disaster. I'm officially 0-1 on the gambling season. I took Navy. It was kind of a rage bet. As soon as Notre Dame's band fired up shipping up to Boston, I took Navy in the points. And you know what, Matt? I thought Notre Dame would have some class and respect our troops and not, you know, run up the score. But I guess not. 42-3 was the final. Navy did not cover, and the Fighting Frenchmen get out to an opening season win in Dublin, which is they should have played. I saw a tweet. They should have played this game in Paris.
Was that your tweet? It feels like
no,
a tweet that should have been yours.
It was a tweet on the interwebs.
Someone has stolen it. Yeah, look, I think that we can definitely say when we play Army in a month, you know, just because we respect the troops, that's a game, if anything, we'll win by like a field goal. But we might lose it because we respect the troops that much, and I think Notre Dame, you know, can't stand for that. This was a pretty sickening week leading up to this game of, you know, the amount of, like, Irish angle they were playing up. Like, again, I think that you and I and the Boston College fan base knows probably more than any other school. Like, no one else, I think, realizes that they're founded by the French. It maybe shouldn't bother us as much as it does, but here we are. Like, all of these, you know, nice folks in Dublin who were so excited to welcome this Irish team into their city for a week, like, thought they were, you know, really welcoming, you know, the sons of hardworking Irishmen in Boston. And that's just not the case. So, you know, it's a shame that they were kind of hoodwinked like that. I don't think that the kind folks of Ireland deserve that. So seeing that was pretty sickening. You know, it made me say that we need to go back to a game in Ireland. I know, what was this, 6 years ago when we played there last? Like, we need to get back there. We are the only Irish Catholic school.
Georgia Tech was 2016. Patty Tolles.
I think it was, six or seven, right? So we need to get back there. We are the only Irish Catholic school. You know, even if you want to make it against Notre Dame, you know, because they want to play up this BS Irish angle, fine, I'll take it. But that's my takeaway, was that this was a painful week watching the hype, and also we need to go back to the Aviva.
42-3 on you know, one of the nation's, you know, like, Navy is just a historical institution. And, you know, fun fact, actually, they said it on the broadcast. I didn't realize this, but during World War II, Navy actually bailed Notre Dame out of a bunch of financial difficulties. And to, you know, to beat them like that, 42-3, it's not surprising at this point. That's what you get with a Notre Dame team. But that's all I want to say on that. Let's move on. We got a lot to cover before Northern Illinois coming up in 7 days here. I think the best way to do this is we'll just kind of go back and forth here. We'll talk Pood and Dude. As you guys know, that's our famous segment here. And maybe we can start with some of the negatives. There's a lot to and we don't want to, you know, recap all of last season. I think we're all sick of dealing with it. I know the players and Coach Half are sick of talking about it. But there are some negatives from the offseason that we can rip through before turning the page to some of the positives and some of the good things that we can look forward to this season. Matt, do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, I'll go with the first one. I don't know if this is on your list, and you know how I feel about calling out people individually, but this guy's an adult, so he can deal with it. I don't understand why we brought back Matt Applebaum as our offensive line coach. I mean, do you disagree? He oversaw now, and I know there was the whole zone blocking thing or whatever, things above my pay grade, but I know you play enough Madden to know kind of the X's and O's of it. But, like, he took what was historically a great offensive line and basically decimated them in his first year. He's gone, rightly so. And now he just shows up again and is back. Like, I have a ton of, as I'll talk about in a minute, a ton of optimism about what this offensive line is going to do this year. But, like, we really couldn't find anybody else. And maybe this is a bigger issue. Maybe it's more of a Halfley issue of they can tell he's on the hot seat, whatever it might be. But, like, if the best we can get is a retread who's, you know, failed out of a lot of jobs, it's not quite as bad as Gouge. Obviously, it's a step up. But it does feel like we're, you know, reinventing a wheel that we don't need to reinvent.
Yeah, I actually would have preferred we give Googe another year rather than
that's crazy.
Dude, I mean, what he did in 2020, we had five all-ACC guys and we somehow had the worst offensive line, I think, in history. Well, up until we broke that last year. But in 2020, I mean, we had guys like Zion and Petrula and Lindstrom and Mahogany. It was a disaster. So, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Kind of feels like that's what we did with Coach Applebaum. Maybe he'll surprise us, maybe not. The whole coaching search, obviously, we turned over most of the key positions on the coaching staff in the offseason. And, you know, I recall we waited and waited until I think it was March or April when they finally said, hey, here's our staff. And there's some concerns, right? The coordinators could be a disaster on both sides. I think defensively, we'll probably be okay. We lost Tim Lukaboo, who went back to the pros. So they promoted Coach Azar to co-DC. He's sharing duties with linebacker coach Sean Duggan. Obviously, that's Halfley's wheelhouse as well. So I don't have a ton of issues on the defensive side. I think that will be, you know, hopefully a step up from last year. You know, we gave up like 30 points or something like that per game. So there's certainly room for improvement. But, you know, the fact that we got to retain Coach Azar, I think, is big. He's obviously one of our top recruiters. My bigger issue is on the offensive side of the football. Obviously, it was a disaster last year. We don't have to, you know, keep beating that dead horse. But Halfley also decided, hey, we're going to have two offensive coordinators this year. And so Rob Chudzinski he's going to be the big picture guy, right? And Steve Shimko, who I think was the tight end coach, is going to call the plays based on whatever game plan Chud puts together. It seems like Halfley is just kind of waving the white flag, removing himself completely from the offensive side of the football. He's saying, I don't get it. Chud, you take it. You be the offensive coach, pretty much. My one concern on Shimko is Halfley called him a rising star, which to me, that's kind of the kiss of death. If Halfley thinks you're a good offensive coordinator, you're probably not. So between all of those, there's certainly some concerns that the coordinators, I don't think they'll be worse than last year, but I don't know that there's going to be this great incremental improvement, but we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's almost like a canary in the coal mine of a broader issue of we did this whole national search, like you said, and this is what we ended up with. Now, obviously a lot of that is guys just looking at last season and, you know, hearing chatter and understanding that Halfley is indeed on the hot seat. And I don't know what that number is, if he needs to get to six wins, whatever the number is in order for him to stick around. But obviously you don't want to go, you know, move your family to Boston to take a job at a, you know, what has become, unfortunately, a lower level Power Five program, knowing that there's a good chance your head coach is fired, you know, in 9 months. So I understand that. My bigger concern is that if there's, you know, more to it than that, and people in coaching circles like saying, you know, behind closed doors that Halfley has no idea what he's doing, and, you know, ignore the fact that he may or may not get fired, like, you just don't want to go work for this guy because he's going to be a stain on your career no matter what happens. Maybe I'm reading into the situation a little bit too much, but you would think that we could still get at least some, you know, up and coming hotshot. And I know you used up and coming in a bad way there, but like, you actually get some, you know, 28-year-old wunderkind who wants to come in here and just try his hand at running an offense. And the fact that we couldn't get anything like that, or, you know, get a look like that, is, I don't know, potentially concerning if I'm kind of putting my conspiracy theory hat on.
Definitely. I think there's some concern that, you know, why would you want to go work for a lame duck unless you're in a bad situation? And then if you're in a bad situation, you're probably not doing a great job. So the sample size is probably limited from which, you know, BC could say, hey, do you want to come work for a year? And so, yeah, unfortunately, that's the reality. That's what happens when you're in year four and appearing to head the wrong direction. So that was a negative.
Got it out of our system.
Yeah,
got it out of our system.
Maybe we do a positive. I want to talk a little bit about Donovan Ezeraku, Big Easy. He's the guy to watch this year. He was by far our best defensive player last year. He had 8.5 sacks and 14.5 tackles for a loss. He's a preseason All-ACC first teamer, has been named to the Nagurski Award. Bronco Nagurski, ultimate dude. Shout out to Steve
Adazio. That's a good reference.
And so I think he's going to be kind of the main guy on defense. We're better when we have a dominant edge guy. You guys remember Harold Landry and Zach Allen. Guys like that can really change the entire ability of your defense to contain the run and threat against the pass too. So we haven't had that in recent years. As much as I love some of the guys that have been at that position recently, we haven't had this game changer in, you know, 4 or 5 years. So I think that he's the guy that's going to make our defense go. He's going to, you know, certainly cause some turnovers. He's going to hopefully keep the offense, at least they have to keep him in mind, right? The quarterback has him lurking in the back of his head, and, you know, hopefully that's going to lead to negative plays and help out the other position groups, because I think we'll need it. So easy, that's a big positive this year. He's going to do great things, and you know, I don't know what the draft projections looking like, but if he continues improving year over year like he has, he could be another guy that goes first round.
I like it. I'm going to kind of go counter to my first point, but my biggest dude, aptly, you know, named dude as a group, is going to be the offensive line. I think despite the Applebaum hire and everything else I just said, I have a ton of high expectations for this group, especially compared to last year. Obviously, it starts with Mahogany being back. That's massive. It was a huge, huge, huge loss to lose him last year. I think, you know, you talk about draft prospects. I think he's, you know, considered to be a, you know, relatively top prospect. So having him back will absolutely be massive. And, you know, credit too to like a character guy. And this, again, goes against kind of what I was saying potentially about people, you know, not saying good things about Halfley. But like you saw it with Zay and you're seeing it with Mahogany. They easily could have transferred or, you know, left a year early or, you know, done a number of different things. But for him to stick around as, and, you know, as a grad student and want to stay at BC, I think shows a positive character to him, but also to what this program is potentially building. So super positive about him being back, obviously, but I think the broader line as a whole, you know, there's a ton to be positive about. So, you know, I don't know if you watch, Matt, the ACC road trip episode with Boston College that came out last week or the week before. I think you were in a Caribbean island, so you may have missed it. But they were very high on the dudes up front as well. They took him to Eagles Deli. They all ate a bunch of burgers, which is always good. You got to have your big dogs eat. So overall, I am very positive about what's going to come out of that front. And I think, you know, as we've always seen as BC fans, like our game starts up front, whether that's a run game or giving Moorhead or whoever the quarterback is, potentially, we'll talk about that more time. So if we can get a good protection this year, I think that will be night and day versus, you know, what we've been dealing with previously.
Agreed. Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. I was in Bermuda. Shout out to the Swizzle Inn. If you've ever been there, if you know, you know. I'm actually playing hurt. This is good radio here, but on screen I'm showing my what's called the Bermuda tattoo. That's what when you crash a moped and you wind up taking some of the pavement home with you. So
it's to help our audience. It's a really bad. It's like a really bad scar. What, yeah. Is a moped like a, that's a two, like, are you supposed to be able to tip over on that? Is that two wheels or
what's like a moped? It's like a motorcycle. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm a guy that I don't think I've ever ridden a moped. I haven't ridden a bike in 15 years, but you know, when you're in Bermuda, you know, that's what people do. And the challenge there, because it's a British colony too, they drive on the left side of the road. So that was part of it. But it's all right. We got back on the bike, much like BC needs to get back on the bike. Yeah. So we're all good. Plane hurt. Actually, my golf game's in shambles, but I did play yesterday and played through the pain, and it was all good. So the accounting is fine. Playing through it, the VLOOKUPs are still.
I was worried
going
about
strong.
Your ability to do Excel with the torn arm. So that's huge.
Yeah, it's been, you know, it's, I'd say 80% have been So I'm playing through it. It's all good. Agree with what you said on the O-line. It's probably a good segue into some of the transfers that we got, which are both positives and negatives. Some of the key guys that we got through the transfer portal are on the O-line. I think we got a guy from Virginia, a guy from somewhere else. This is where the lack of research kicks in. But I think they're going to be pretty good. I would have preferred that we took like 10 more offensive linemen. Obviously, that resulted, everyone saw last year, having the worst offensive line in football is detrimental to your ability to move the football down the field. So it's good that we brought, you know, a couple of those guys in. Hopefully, you know, they're veterans, so you put them along with Mahogany, who hopefully can stay healthy, along with the guys like Drew Kendall and Ozzy. We got a pretty good line as long as the guys stay, you know, upright. And then, you know, on top of that, we also brought in, let's see who else. Oh, the UCF guys you got to talk about, right?
Yep.
Tommy Castellanos, the UCF transfer. Obviously, we have a quarterback, Emmett Moorhead, who certainly had some bright spots last season, namely the, you know, NC State game, played well against Duke. But as we've learned with Jerko the past couple years, it's good to have a backup. And he's also more of a dual threat. So I do wonder if they're going to have some type of, like, he reminds me a little bit of Tyler Murphy. Like, he certainly has some running ability. I wonder if they do some type of multi-quarterback system, or at least draw up a couple packages for him, like the Sean Glennon, Tyrod Taylor type days of Virginia Tech. I know the old saying is, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. And then on top of that, our coaches couldn't really figure out one offense last year, so maybe we shouldn't be doing two. But, you know, it's certainly, there's no downside to having him on the roster. And then, you know, Ryan O'Keefe, he runs like a 2-second 40. He's one of the fastest guys we've ever seen on the field. He's also from UCF. He, I think, is faster from end to end. I think he's faster than Zay. Zay might be more agile and have, you know, better quickness, but straight line speed, you know, O'Keefe could be our home run threat this year. So I think those guys are huge. We also got like 12 defensive backs in the portal, classic Halfley, but got some big guns through the portal this year that we're excited about.
Apropos of nothing and not at all relevant to football, but Ryan O'Keefe and Tommy Castellanos sounds like two guys who got, you know, kicked out of Fenway for underage drinking and fighting, not like a quarterback and wide receiver combo from UCF. So yeah. That's going to mess with me all season. Even just earlier today when I was looking through the roster trying to find those guys, it took me six or seven passes until I realized who I was looking for. So we got there. Agree. I don't know if there's quite a quarterback controversy. Like, I think I probably lean more towards, you know, your view of like a dual threat or kind of a two quarterback type system. You know, again, because if you feel very confident about Moorhead being the guy for all 12 games or all 15 games, you know, then it's like, all right, well, let's get someone like Delaportas, you know, to be second string and get him the reps of the second string team and kind of build him up a little bit. I know he's only, what is he officially? I think he's officially two classes behind Moorhead, or I don't know, one or two.
Matt, I have some bad news. Delaportas transferred like 6 months ago.
Matt, you remember earlier when I said that I've done no research? He's still on the roster here. So that's, I don't blame myself. I blame whoever replaced Jason Baum for not taking him off. All right, fine. Who do we want to say? Matt Ruby? But Ruby's a junior, so you're not going to get him the reps.
Nope. Keep naming
Ruby's gone too?
I'm pretty sure. I know Menard's gone, but keep naming him. Keep going.
Jack Brandon, I've never heard of. That sounds like a fake guy in Madden. Shane Hannafin, I think he's a hockey player. and Jacoby Robinson, I think he played for like Florida like 6 years ago.
No. So, Jacoby Robinson, I think he's third string. He's actually pretty good. So those are the three guys.
All right, those are it. We got three quarterbacks, not the seven.
Don't edit this out, because I think a lot of BC fans are in the same boat. They need this kind of catch up and recap on the offseason, especially with this wild, wild west transfer portal situation.
Well, look, and also too, I do think like this is kind of on the team, right? Like when this team was consistently, you know, even seven wins or you know, then, you know, the Flutie years, people are trying to like win a couple more games. Like, you just would care more in the offseason. Like, I talked to my friends from, you know, who root for, you know, true Power Five football teams that are in the hunt for New Year's bowls every day. Like, they know everything that happens every day in the offseason because there's a reason to care. We can't put this much work into a 3-9 football team. It's not healthy for us to do it. So I unplugged. I didn't really see who was joining the transfer portal or who left, rather. So I don't know. Here we are. We're all trying to
help each other. No, it was news to me too. I'm with you. That was part of my 20 minutes of research, was going through the portal. I just want to list off a couple guys that have left just to jog everyone's memory. Obviously, Phil to Pitt was the big one. Jerko, which I love how the national media is like, oh, you got Frank Cignetti and Big Phil Jerk back together to work.
Walker, the moron from Mississippi who can't, you know, doesn't know how to read a book. And now all of a sudden he's the biggest Phil Jerkovic fan in the world. He couldn't pick out Pittsburgh or Boston on a map.
Everyone's saying
it, though. Think that, oh, he went to Notre Dame. He was, you know, top, you know, this great recruit, whatever. And by the way, nothing but respect for Phil. His first year here, I thought, was great. The injury, though, like, changed who he was as a player 100%, and he just hasn't been the same since. So people expecting him to get back to what he was in the COVID year are out of their minds.
Totally agree. All right, so Jalen Gill is now at Fresno State. Jason Maitre went to Wisconsin. I'm not going to name all of them, just kind of the heavy hitters here. Finn Durstein and Josh DeBerry, get this, Matt, Texas A&M. Steve Adazio strikes back, baby.
Yeah.
So those are the
DeBerry's a big loss. DeBerry's a big loss from what I think. I don't know.
Yeah, and a little unusual that we lost that many D-backs. You figure that Halfley had shown, at least Ohio State, that he was capable of developing these guys. So, you know, I wonder if there's more to the story there. These guys aren't potentially getting the reps, or they feel like they're not going to make it to the next level, which was one of Halfley's big selling points. So that's certainly, you know, a bad thing. But like I said, we did backfill with some transfers, that some of which are pretty good. So I don't think we'll be in – I think overall it was a net positive portal-wise with, you know, especially the O-line guys and UCF guys that I talked about. So and I think that's important, because when you have a shitty year like we did, Like, I don't know that I would have stuck around. I would have, because I love BC, but like, it's so easy to go elsewhere now. And if you're a star player, like a guy like Ezeraku, for example, like he probably could have made, he definitely could have made a bunch of money going to an SEC power. But the fact that he's, you know, was willing to stick it out, it doesn't mean, in this era of college football, like that's huge. So
character overall, guys, man, character guys.
All right. So let's see what else is on the list here. Let's just mention conference realignment briefly here.
Okay.
Obviously, it sucks what happened in the Pac-12, and it's like we're erasing these great traditions and all that, and everyone, I think, feels like we're on the same page there, that the networks and the money are kind of ruining some of the traditions that we all love about college football and what makes it unique compared to the pros. Speaking specifically to what's been in the news this week, potentially Stanford, Cal, and SMU are looking to join the ACC. You know, just my take, and I haven't done a ton of research on this, but I think it'd be good to have them. Obviously, Stanford's a brand. Cal's a brand. SMU is SMU. But I think it'd be good just from a stability standpoint, right? Obviously, you
100%.
You have teams that are threatening to leave, and most of all, Florida State, and I really can't stand their arrogance right now. I mean, you have one good year in 10 years. Like, they're barely 500 over the past decade, and they're acting like it's the 1990s, you know, Seminoles that were actually in, you know, nationally relevant. So, but yeah, the reality is that despite the grant of rights going through, what is it, 2036?
36, I think, yeah.
Like, we're going to see some movement, and teams will be leaving the ACC in the next few years, I have to imagine. And
I mean, it's
weird. Looking at the opportunity costs, like, they're going to leave at some point.
Yeah, I mean, like, everyone's kind of – it's been the hot thing to say on Twitter since this all started, you know, whatever, I guess like a year ago now. They're like, oh, there's, you know, definitely all these lawyers sitting in a room trying to figure out how to get out of this grant of rights. It's been a year, and, like, no one's really done anything, and they've, I think, tried everything they can. It does seem like – and again, I'm not a legal guy. We have our legal counsel that we could turn to for this. But, like, it does feel like this thing is kind of rock solid, doesn't it? Like – it almost feels like if it was going to happen, it kind of would have already. And I know FSU has had their, you know, whatever, their board of regents and everyone else come out, and they're being very, you know, blustery about like, oh yeah, we're going to definitely get out of here, and we're not long for the ACC and all that. And they're voting against Stanford and Cal. But I don't know. It does kind of feel like their play right now is just to be kind of dicks and like try to ruin everything and try to vote against Stanford and Cal and like try to make the ACC unstable, but they really can't go anywhere. So we'll see how it all turns out. I do think, yeah, adding Stanford and Cal from purely a football perspective, and I guess a basketball perspective too, I think would be awesome. You know, we're supposed to play at Stanford, what, in like, I mean, I know these out-of-conference schedules don't matter anymore, but we're supposed to play them in a couple years or whatever it is. Like, that, I think we're all super excited about. Another great academic institution. It does kind of shore the ACC up as this, like, you know, the academic conference, because obviously they can't read in the SEC. Big Ten is like fine. Those are fine schools, but they're more like, I don't know, just Midwest having a ton of fun. And I don't know, the Big 12 doesn't really exist anymore. So it would shore up the ACC.
Matt, can I stop you there? So the Big 12 does exist, and they actually added a bunch of teams from the Pac-10 or Pac-12.
That's right. Sorry. All right, Pac-12 doesn't exist. But either way, those are kind of the stepchild conference. So the ACC can be kind of like the coastal elite conference, so to speak. I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, every year, and I kind of get it if you're Clemson, right? And part of the argument is that, you know, why do we make the same as a BC or a Wake Forest or a UVA? I kind of get it. I'd be pissed off too.
Then they should have had better lawyers 5 years ago, right? Like, that's on them. You signed this deal.
I think that's the fair counterpoint. And you're right. If it was possible to break the, like, if there was a legal argument, it would have been broken by now, and they would have left and said, hey, we'll deal with it in court. Right. The other reality is, and then we can move on, I don't know that anyone wants FSU. Like, the Big Ten doesn't. I know that. They're more focused on the North Carolina schools.
I think the SEC does, right? The SEC would take them immediately.
It doesn't seem like it. Seems like the SEC is pretty content to stand pat for now. So, when the FSU president was saying all that stuff, and most of it was just kind of a temper tantrum, like, you didn't see any other conferences say, oh yeah, we'd be interested. Like, I think UNC is certainly a brand that people can get behind. Despite the academic, you know, issues they had, it's a good school, great brand. North Carolina is a very important market. I think the Gators would have a big issue with FSU coming in, right? Like, there's a lot of politics to some of this stuff. I love how NC
State's
like
BC UConn. It's like BC UConn in 2004, right? Like, you don't want a regional guy coming in.
NC State's hitching their wagon to North Carolina, which is probably a good strategy, but they're one of the ones that seemed, I guess, voted against Stanford and Cal.
It is a good strategy, but it's hilarious. Who do these guys think they are that, like, anybody cares about NC State at all? I understand. I think there's, like, some legal things to it because I think because they're all part of, like, the Carolina State school system, like, they kind of have to vote together. But NC State continues to be the most arrogant fan base in the ACC, that they think that they in any way are this like prize jewel of conference realignment and belong in some, you know, top tier conference alongside Alabama or, you know, going the Big Ten route.
Right. 100%.
I got a lot of hate in my heart today, Matt. Feels like
no, I can
kind
tell.
Of some things out here.
I can tell. I have a couple other dudes here. One is, I think we touched on, we can't possibly be worse. I'm gonna just rip off some stats from last year's campaign that we all, and then we'll all put it out of our memory for the rest of the time. 17.8 points per game offensively compared to 30.3 points allowed on D per game. Not going to win a lot of games playing like that. 63 rushing yards per game, dead last in FBS by a mile. Dead last in virtually every single offensive line advanced statistic. We lost to UConn. Notre Dame beat us 44-0. We cannot be worse. I think that's the number one dude. Like, it just can't be, right?
Yep.
Going hand in hand with that is we have the easiest schedule in the country, according to ESPN Football Power Index. The downside is, like, six wins is not really an accomplishment this year, and it could result in someone like Father Leahy being, saying, hey, we made the Fenway Bowl. Five more years for Halfley. Six wins is not an accomplishment this year. Like, there's no excuse. We should sweep our out-of-conference schedule. We can get into it, the game-by-game breakdown if we have time here today. But, like, this is, I want to say, eight wins minimum. That means we're at least heading in the right direction. The other downside is we could really embarrass BC football further. Obviously, we lost to UConn last year. This year, we play Holy Cross. Like, are we going to lose to Holy Cross, who just joined FBS? I don't know. They're actually kind of decent. We'll get into it. Are we going to lose to UConn again? I think we play UConn again, right? Revenge yep. game. Like, yep. If Halfley hasn't gotten his shit together by now, this could be another historic bad year that this time has even more laughingstock of New England, you know, connotations. So it's a dude and a poo, depending on what Halfley did this offseason.
Yeah, nothing to add. Again, I think the benefit, like I said earlier, is that last year just made me numb. I guess that's a good thing. Like, I can't get hurt anymore, at least as far as I know. Now, we'll see if we're, you know, rip off, you know, we beat Florida State, we rip off the first, you know, whatever it is, six wins, and then we lose to, like, Army on the road or something, then that's going to be a pain I haven't felt in some time. But if we lose Northern Illinois, if we lose to Holy Cross, you know, it's like, at what point, I can't get hurt anymore.
Right.
And I don't know, man.
Listen, you, like, these turnarounds can happen. We saw TCU 100%. Last
year, oh my God,
right?
100%. It just Halfley has not shown to be the guy. I don't know. I don't want to get into it being positive. I just, like, I haven't seen anything other than Moorhead. I like Moorhead a lot. I haven't seen anything from Halfley that indicates to me that he's going to be the guy to engineer a turnaround from what was one of the worst seasons in, you know, BC history last year.
Right. So I was going to bring a couple of examples, and it's kind of, I'm kind of joking, kind of not. I don't know. TCU was 5-7 last year before they made the Natty. Obviously, that was a coaching change situation. Same thing with Duke, right? Duke had a big turnaround. They were 3-9 the year before and then went to 9-4 last season under Elko.
I mean, Adazio did it a couple times. I mean, they were big turnarounds, but he took it from, you know, whatever, two wins to, you know, six.
Two, like, to seven. And
seven, right? So, like, you can do it, but I don't know.
Yeah, that was, after 2015? Oh, that was Daz's third year. That wasn't so good. I'm getting my math mixed up here. It was Spaz through 13.
It was the Fenway game.
Andre Williams
against, it was the year we played Fenway at Notre Dame, so it would have been our third year out of college.
Fall of 13. So fall 13, of Adazio took over. Yeah, I'm doing the timeline here. So yeah, Adazio took over fall of 2013.
It was the fall of 2015. It was the 2015 season.
Well, yeah, but, like, even before that, Spaz, we'd gone 2-10 our senior year, and then Adazio took the team over, and what'd we go, 7-6 for a couple years, right. And then, yeah, until 2015, and then kind of turned around again under Patty Tolles, made a bowl. So, anyway, just saying, it can happen. You know, we're probably not going to be in the Natty next season, but you never know.
You never know.
Moorhead could be in the Heisman discussion. Azuraku could be the game changer on defense. Like, there's a lot of ways for this to go right. A lot of it comes down to the O-line, obviously, which we'll talk about. All right, so I think that's everything on my list. Is there anything I didn't mention?
No, I want to. Well, I have one other. I want to talk about the receivers, but we can kind of hit on that if I move to Eagles in the Wild, Matt, if that works for you.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, so Eagles in the Wild, again, as a reminder to people, because we haven't recorded in like 3 years, is generally where we look at BC alumni and the great things they're doing all over the world, sporting and otherwise. So the first one on our list has to be Zay Flowers, first round draft pick, has been tearing it up in the preseason so far. He is unguardable. I think he is the best athlete to ever come out of the BC program. And I don't want to say the best player because it's an argument that I don't feel like getting into. And I also don't know that he would be the answer, but the best athlete to ever come out of the program. And I think he's going to have a massive career. Obviously, the downside to that is the gaping hole that it leaves in the wide receivers room. But Matt, this is like a group that, if you want to talk about a group that kind of had a big loss, but I'm not that worried about, this is probably the one. I mean, obviously, we talked about O'Keefe and reloading with that, but like Dino Tomlin, I think, has made a lot of strides. I think Joe Griffin Jr. is the one who's having a great training camp so far. Mm-hmm. But even if you read the write-ups, like I think you see, you know, Jaden Skeet, you see Lewis Bond's name. Like, I don't know. It seems like, based on everything that I'm reading out of camp, which is, again, very little, pretty much just tweets from AJ Black, that our receivers are actually starting to show out, and there's some reasons for optimism here.
Right. Plus Takis, if he's fully healthy, I think he was banged up most of last year, but yeah, he's supposed to be a pretty good pass catcher as well. There's a lot of weapons, and you know, you talk about, obviously we still have Garwo and Broom. If he can get going out of the backfield, like, there's a lot of weapons on this offense. That's why it all kind of comes down to, can we get the offensive line sorted out? It's just kind of a waste of all these skill guys, much like we wasted Zay otherwise. But yeah, just on the Zay stuff too, like what he's doing in camp, it's not a surprise to anyone what he's doing in camp and thus far.
It's not a surprise to any of us. I think it is a surprise to like the country.
Of course. Yeah. But he's pretty much locked in as Lamar Jackson's wide receiver one. I need to look up what his
is
offensive
that true?
Rookie. I mean, it's him and Odell who's getting up there.
There's
so.
One other guy too. I saw Zay listed as wide receiver three at something last week, and I thought that seemed low, but there's one other guy that's in between them. But either way, I think he's going to be like rookie of the year type stuff.
Yeah. And plus Tony touchdowns is in Baltimore too, I'm pretty sure. So, yeah, I'm going to put some money down on Zay for offensive rookie of the year. That's a no brainer. I got one of the Eagles in the Wild here, Matt. Were you watching the Notre Dame Navy game?
I watched the first quarter and then I got sick to my stomach.
Until Notre Dame was bad sports about it. Yeah. They said on the broadcast, and they just kind of said it in passing, Luke Kuechly is apparently mentoring some of the Notre Dame linebackers. Like, what are we
don't
doing?
Like that.
Hey, Luke, Band of Brothers, you should watch it sometime.
I don't like that. So, I don't like that. You were his freshman year roommate, basically.
I was. I know. So anyway, that's Eagles in the Wild. Yeah.
Do you still have his number? I feel like you should place a call there. I know you've placed many of voicemails at some point during our 4 years, but I don't know if you've spoken with him since.
I got ways I can get to him. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll see what
that's
I
good.
Can do.
But all right, fire that
up. I don't want to make this a big deal, but why isn't Halfley, you know, calling Luke? Why isn't he on the staff? Stupid.
Yeah.
Didn't Sean Duggan play with him? Why isn't Sean calling him?
I don't know that they overlapped. Did they?
I don't know.
I don't know either. All right. I got one more Eagles in the Wild, Matt. Starting a new thing this year. You've seen it on Twitter a couple times. Game day runs on the West Side Highway. I think that New York City, of Power 5 programs, I think BC has to be in the top like 10 of alumni bases of Power 5 programs in New York City. Obviously, if Syracuse, Penn State, probably Rutgers, but Rutgers kids probably live in like Hoboken or something.
Wow.
But you have some big programs at the top. But I think BC absolutely falls into the top 10, if not top 5. Michigan is huge here. So anyways, point is, on the West Side Highway of Manhattan, for those who are not familiar with the area, great running track. A lot of just like good-looking guys and girls running around on Saturdays. It's a very good-looking part of the town. And everyone is wearing, or many people are wearing, college gear. So I'm kind of carrying the flag for BC, it feels like. I wear a BC hat and a BC shirt every time I go out on Saturdays. When I go during the week, I wear like Lululemon or like nice things. But if I go on the weekends, I always wear the alma mater gear. And it's a direct measurement of how we're doing as a fan base is the number of kind of go Eagles and the responsiveness that I get. Because again, when we're doing well, we're after a big win, or if we're kind of running off a good start to the season, like everyone's excited. If you see the maroon and gold anywhere, you're going to make a point to chase someone down and give kind of a go Eagles shout out. When things are not going well, it's the exact opposite. So we're trending not in a great spot right now. I went out for a long one today. I only got I got three. They were all induced by myself. I chased one. There was a couple, and the girl was wearing a BC backpack. I was going to take a right, but I ended up going straight to chase them down to say go Eagles. So that one I kind of forced. No one said it to me, which is a little bit concerning. So it's just something to keep an eye on throughout the rest of the season. But I'm going to do it every game day. I like to get out, you know, 9 or 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning. So if you see a 6'5" guy running like 7-minute miles on the West Side Highway, not a big deal. In BC gear, it's probably me. Go ahead and give it an Eagles shout out.
Matt runs. That's the headline there.
Yep.
Matt super does cardio, fast. Runs long distances.
How's the BC Alumni Network in Philly, Matt?
It's strong. I'd say it's strong to quite strong.
Is it just you?
Yeah, I'm not as much of a cardio guy. I'm more of just arms only.
Yep.
So you know that. And so if I see folks at the gym, you know, sometimes I'll give a wave. But yeah, it's good. We're gonna get the game watches going this year down here. Excited about that. For any games I can't make it up to Chestnut Hill on. Well, that's the thing. It was a bit of a COVID situation with the go-to bar, so we have to kind of build it back up. So I'm working with a couple local prospects. There's a neighborhood bar a few blocks.
Oh, you're
down.
Taking the reins.
Good candidate. I mean, the people that are currently running it, it's been radio silent. So yeah, we'll make it happen. If you're in the Philly area, shoot me a message and we'll make it happen on game days. I might just have people over here. We'll just kind of have
a
nice
place.
Time.
The
we'll
roof.
Do some grilling. And, yeah, why not? Huh? So, all right, let's talk. So I got one thing left to talk about, Matt, and that's Northern Illinois. Do you want to go game by game? I don't really have a good feel on the schedule. I know it's really easy, and I know Florida State's kind of the only good opponent that we have. So we have a chance to do well. I mean, maybe we save that for a future episode due to my lack of preparedness to go game by game here.
I would like to just go kind of a quick Mike and the Mad Dog game by game. You know, I know you're not a Mike and the Mad Dog guy, but you go through and basically say
what that means.
Couldn't be easier. You just go through game by game.
We do this,
say,
we do this every year.
You know, yeah, home, Holy Cross, win, et cetera.
Okay, all right,
I
wanted,
there's a couple things. I want to make a couple points here and there as we go.
We do a
so if I'm
draft.
Running through in here. Yeah, well, we can kind of do it together.
Okay.
Northern Illinois at home, I think that's a win. I have some concerns, and we can give our proper Northern Illinois breakdown in a minute.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think that's a win.
Yeah, fine. For the sake of this exercise, win.
Okay. Holy Cross, I think this is the game that everyone has circled on their calendar as like being absolutely terrified of, and potentially for good reason. I have it as a win, Matt, but like I don't think people are wrong to be very concerned. Holy Cross obviously had a very successful year in the FBS last year. What did they make? The semifinals? National semifinals? I don't know. They had a really good year. They beat Buffalo, a Division I team. I think that was the only Division I team they beat. But they beat a Division I team. They beat UConn the year before. We lost to UConn this year. Like, we very well could have lost to Buffalo last year. Maine, we... I don't know if it's fair to say we struggled with Maine, like we ended up pulling away, but it wasn't as comfortable as we necessarily would have liked to have been. So I don't think there's reason to be like, we are definitely going to lose this game, but it's not our traditional Division II team of like, oh, we're playing Howard and we're going to win by, 85-0 and they're going to stop the clock in the third quarter.
I don't know if I had a dream or something. I thought Holy Cross joined FBS. That's not true. Maybe it's because
they're better
than UMass and UConn.
So, I thought it was FC. Yeah, okay. You said it earlier. All good.
Maybe they just joined FCS from Division II. I don't know, Matt. Doesn't matter. Bob Chesney's their coach. He's a stud, and hopefully he's coaching waiting. If Halfley is not the guy long term, which we all hope he is, but yeah, they ripped through their schedule, last year, and yeah, they lost to, looks like, South Dakota State in the quarterfinals. So no shame in that.
Quarterfinals.
Don't know anything about their, roster or who's, their quarterback or anything like that. But it's going to be a close game, I bet. I mean, we'll talk about it. But I think if we have an offensive line, it won't be. And if we don't have an offensive line, then we'll probably be in danger of losing there. So let's count it as a win for now.
Quick debate that we've been having. I don't know if you and I have been having it or with some of our other friends. Bob Chesney, is he a good-looking guy? I think he is, but I'm not sure.
I don't have a visual on him. Let me...
He has some pictures where he's definitely a good-looking coach. Not like Cliff Kingsbury, obviously, but good-looking guy. And then others where he kind of looks a little like Halfley. So just something to keep an eye on if he does become our next head coach.
He looks like... Let's see here. Who was Jack Bauer's number two at 24?
Tony Almeida.
He looks like Tony Almeida.
Tony Almeida was good the whole time, right? He went bad for a season, but that was just because he was being undercover. Is that right?
I think that's right, yeah.
Or it was when his wife got killed. Mm-hmm. Then he kind of got angry at the CTU.
That sounds right. Because I remember it was kind of, oh, yeah, Michelle. That was the – didn't Jack also have a thing with her? Maybe not.
Jack had a thing with Nina, and then Nina went bad. That's Nina right. Definitely was bad.
I don't remember any of this.
I don't know if Jack had a thing with Michelle.
It's been 20 years.
Rest in peace to Edgar, though.
Yeah, that was a tough death. In real life?
If it wasn't the gas, it would have been a heart attack. But
yeah. He died a hero. By the way, we should move on quickly here, but watch Designated Survivor. I'm like midway through season two. I watched the first few episodes, then when it came out 5 years ago. It's an awesome show. Like, it's pretty good. Season two kind of sucks, but season one was awesome. So recommend it. That's Kiefer Sutherland, loaded cast. And he's president and he's a designated survivor. So
don't take this the wrong way, but it's not surprising to me that you are a network TV guy. No offense.
I also streamed Swamp Kings about the Florida Gators last night. So I'll do both, actually.
Okay. That's ideal. All right. Florida State. Look, even, I am a very optimistic BC fan. I think Florida State is, you know, probably a little bit overrated. Mike Norvell seems like an absolute douchebag. That said, I think that we're going to be in some trouble here. I'm counting this as a loss if I'm being just totally objective. If we pull it off, I think I will put it this way. If we start the season 3-0, I will feel very confident that we're going to win the national championship. But I don't see it happening.
Yeah, it's tough to call this a win after what they did to us last year. And they returned everyone. That's why there's so much hype. I think they're like a top 10 in the coaches poll or in the AP poll. Yeah, it's just, I mean, they might actually be good. Which sucks. I mean, obviously Travis Rudolph potentially is his name, quarterback, who's generating some Heisman hype. He's very quick. He's been killing us the last 4 years. Jared Verse, I know him. He's a stud defensive end that you know was one of the top players in the conference last year. I think they got a couple good transfers on top of it, so they got that great running back as well. So yeah, again, can't call it a win. And I'm just gonna keep saying it. If we don't have an offensive line, it's going to be another, you know, 40-point game like it was last year, which just wasn't close after the first quarter. But Matt, remember what happened last Red Bandana game against Florida State? I think it was the last one. 35-3 back in 2017, I think, something like that. Remember that?
Yep, and I think we've both said that we do not like that the Red Bandana game has been straying into like October and November.
Right.
This is, you know, the first game after September 11th. This is a proper Red Bandana game. It's what, you know, it's basically what the game was meant to be. So you're right. Could be special. Could be a special night. Like USC all over again.
Right.
Louisville, Matt. We head down to Louisville, Kentucky on September 23rd. Louisville. I think this is a win. We beat them last year. Matt, we never talked about this last year because I don't think we were recording at this point. But do you remember how the Louisville game ended last year?
It's funny. I had like nobody recollection.
This wasn't talked about at all. It wasn't talked about on Twitter. It wasn't talked about anywhere. But we basically almost lost that game on a final Hail Mary, like 20 minutes after the ESPN broadcast ended, in what would have, I think, been like up there with the band is on the field for heartbreaking / shocking ways a football game ended.
I don't remember that specifically, but now that you say that, it does jog my memory. I did watch the 2-minute recap because I had no recollection we beat Louisville, who was actually kind of decent last year. They were an eight or nine win team, and it was just kind of the Zay show. That was when he made that nasty catch. It was also when Jerko made one of the worst passes in college football history, throwing it as he was falling down behind him, and resulting in like a 30-yard fumble, an immediate Louisville score, I think. But anyway, yeah, it was a hell of a game, and one of our three wins. So there you go. It's a win.
That's a win. I'm going to count that as a win.
Yeah.
I'm going to count that as a win. So we are 3-1 collectively right now.
Yeah.
Virginia, we can be quick on this. I think Virginia people project to be the worst team in the ACC coming into town on the 30th. That's a win.
We're projected 13th, and they're projected 14th in most prognosticators.
Okay, they're worse than us. Yep. They're worse than us. Win. All right, so we're 4-1.
Kiwi revenge game.
Army, Matt, October 7th. This is the game that I am far and away the most excited about for this season. You and I, a couple of our other roommates from the class of 2013, a couple of the New York fellas, are getting on a ship from New York City up the Hudson to West Point at 7 a.m. on October 7th. It's going to be just a phenomenal morning. The Hudson is, for my money, the most beautiful river in America. I don't know if there will be foliage at that time of year. It might be a little bit early in October. But I'll tell you what, Matt, if you've ever taken the train from New York, the Adirondack, up to Saratoga, up to Albany, you know, that's one of the most picturesque rides you're going to have anywhere in the country. So doing that from the water on, you know, in my mind, what I'm picturing to be this, like, you know, sloop of war up the Hudson is going to be quite an experience. Credit to Boston College alumni for setting this up. It's a pricey package. I think it's like $250, but it includes a ticket, open bar, you know, round trip transportation on the Hudson, everything else you can ask for. So this is by far the game I'm circling as the most excited. And it is a, how do you pronounce the stadium? Is it Mikey or it's spelled Mitchy, but I think it's pronounced Mikey.
Yeah, it's one of those.
Mikey Stadium revenge Mitchie. Game after the terrible, it's spelled Mitchy, but I think it's pronounced Mikey.
Okay.
But it's the Mikey Stadium revenge game after the disaster that was 2012. That was our senior year, 2012.
Correct. You covered it. And I was going to mention, yeah, we have some skeletons that we got to take care of. Terrible, terrible road trip. Good, great time. Had a good time up at Army, walking through West Point. Obviously, very historic, very cool campus. But not a fun drive home after that. I think we allowed 680 something rushing yards that day and 50 points.
Couldn't handle the triple option.
To a bad Army team. So, listen, love the troops, and we just want to see a good football game. Would be nice to get a win there. I don't think they're projected to be very strong this year.
Correct. All right, so we are now at, what is that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 1.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech, Matt.
Matt, heading down to maybe getting some votes. Who knows?
5 and 1, you're getting votes. I know we haven't really beat anyone good at 5 and 1, but I think we're starting to get some votes. We then have a bye week to just kind of collect ourselves, head down to Atlanta. Georgia Tech, I feel good about this one too. I don't really have any reason. Just Georgia Tech, I never really take seriously. This would be a good road trip for us, but I don't know. I can't just go to every game for a team that I just don't really care about that much.
Yeah, back-to-back's not great. I think they have a second-year head coach maybe. And yeah, again, I don't know how they did last year. I assume they weren't very good. But they can typically run the football. Although, no, I'm all messed up. They lost their running back to Alabama. That was last year. So again, has no bearing on this matchup. Matt, we're going to call that a win because we don't know.
A win. Yeah. 6 and 1. Next one is easy. UConn revenge game, homecoming. It's officially homecoming weekend, and it's also like the reunion weekend, which is another topic for another day. But the fact that they're trying to do this whole thing of making some reunions on a football weekend instead of just doing like the summer thing is insane to me, and it's a terrible decision by Boston College. Thank God that we haven't had a football weekend reunion yet. We just go up to football games. We don't need it to be this like reunion event. Anyways, that's the UConn game. It's a revenge game. I think we win that game last year if Moorhead plays the whole time. So now with him in the game, with the, you know, revamped offensive line, everything else that we talked about earlier, I think this is like a Halfley run up the scoreboard game and we win like 60-7, something crazy like that. And we're now standing at 7-1, Matt.
I can't believe how easy this schedule is. Holy cow.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 7-1. This is a really easy schedule. It gets a little tougher here in the next four. I mean, marginally, but
not really. Syracuse is next.
I think that's another. I mean, going to the Dome is always a little tough, but, you know, is Dino Babers still there? I think he's on the hot seat, right?
He is. Yeah, I think they turned around a little bit last year, and they get that quarterback, Garrett Schrader, who's doing maybe year 8. Let me confirm if that's the case. Garrett Schrader. But he's actually pretty good, and he's a dual threat, which we're historically not great at. Yeah, it looks like Gary's still there. So this is probably the first game I'm concerned about. I'm going to call this a win, but it's close.
Okay. I will support that win. We do well in the Dome, it feels like.
Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Depends if Eric Dungy's there.
Moorhead, this was Moorhead's first real minutes, I think, right? Was at Syracuse 2 years ago.
Oh, shit. I'm just remembering.
I don't know if it was his first official time, but he looked good. He came in and he looked pretty good in the Dome.
I'm just remembering how bad we played last year and let that game slip away. So, yeah, another revenge game. Win. Can't play any worse than we did last year.
I'm saying this is 2 years ago.
That, but we also played him last year, Thanksgiving weekend. And it was an effing disaster. So,
all right. 8-1. At this point, we definitely have a lot of – I think we're firmly in the top 25 at 8-1. Vatek at home. Vatek, I think, has been perennially pretty bad. They beat us. They did beat us last year, right?
They did. Yeah, they smoked us.
Yeah, everyone beat us last year. Yeah. They were terrible last year. I don't think that's going to change. 8-1 with a Vatek team coming in, like the stadium's going to be electric. I know they're not like a big time rival, but just 8-1 gets people out in droves. So I think we have a huge home field advantage, and I think we win this one fairly comfortably, and we move to 9-1.
They beat us 27-10, but was this the game where we had like 3 yards of offense at halftime, something like that? I think that's right.
This was week two, I think,
it
right?
It was a night game, and yeah, we dropped to 0-2. We did start to turn it on, and we didn't really make it a game, but we started at least put a couple scores together. And then
Jerk threw a pick on the first drive, I think on the first
that's
pass,
right? Yep, sure
that's
did.
All right? Yeah.
We had 15 yards rushing, at least Garwo did. That's great. So yeah, again, comes down to the O-line. So
it can't get worse.
Let's call it a win. Why not?
All right, 9-1. The game that a lot of people have circled on their calendar, the Phil Jurkovec, Frank Cignetti revenge game. But it's kind of like reverse revenge because it's almost us avenging him for ruining last season for us. I just am like, obviously he's going to have a big chip on his shoulder, but we saw that when he's had chips on his shoulder going to Notre Dame games, he's dropped the ball every time and played terribly. So that doesn't exactly terrify me. This is not a guy who thrives on, you know, motivation or anything like that. So I don't know about you, Matt, but I think going into Heinz Field in mid-November, like it's usually a pretty empty stadium, not a ton of home field advantage. I feel okay calling this one a win and moving us to 10-1.
Yeah, this is one of those games I just you really can't predict against the Eagles. We're not going to go down to Pitts. It's at Pittsburgh, is that right?
It's at Pitt, yeah.
That's not great. I don't know. Flip a coin for this one. There's so many variables on each of these teams. I mean, Narduzzi's done a really good job with that program. So it's not like they're just Jerko and nothing else. Like, he's built a really strong defense. So I'm going to say it one more time, Matt. If we have an O-line, that's a win for us. If we don't, that's a loss. I'm going to say win.
Well, I think we've been assuming we have an O-line in this exercise. So that's a win. 11-1. And then, Matt, I think like this is shades of...
People are turning off the podcast right now. This is
shades of 19... what is it? 19... I don't know. Was the fall of 1985 was the Flutie game? The whole 84? Season things messed me up because like... Because the bowl game would have happened the following calendar year.
I'm pretty sure it was 84, but it doesn't matter.
I think
you
you're right.
Much right.
1984. Okay. Shades of 1984. 11-1, or sorry, 10-1, Boston College, Thanksgiving weekend. The whole country is tuned in. Like, the Moorhead Flutie comparisons will be, you know, all over the place. Everyone's going to be super excited. I could see game day showing up. I think that this is, like, one of the more hyped... Why is this game? This game's scheduled for noon already. Maybe because it's a Thanksgiving weekend. They want
maybe to get flexed.
Can you, like, I feel like if it's in, is that a third?
They always, 24? They always,
oh, it's a Friday, Matt. It's a Friday. It's a Friday after Thanksgiving. After that's Thanksgiving. Even better.
Yeah.
Friday after Thanksgiving, which I think was when the Doug game happened, if I'm right about that. I think it was a Friday.
I don't know what day of the week. I wasn't there. I think it was on Thanksgiving.
It was November 23rd, 1984. Let's see how good my calendar app is here.
Why don't you just Google that date?
Yeah, I got it. I'm going to do the old-fashioned way.
It was a Friday, man. You got it.
Friday. This was a night game. This is a day game. Friday after Thanksgiving. It has shades of Doug Flutie. I think that this is like an ultimate culmination of everything that we've wanted as BC fans forever. And I think it's a super exciting game. Moorhead does something miraculous. We're on the cover of ESPN and, you know, lead story on SportsCenter. We are 11-1. We are ACC champs. And we go from there. Well, I assume ACC champs. Does Florida State lose any games this year? Because they're the only ones who beat us. Where do they got this year?
11-1 will get us there with the divisions going away. We'll be at least in second.
Yeah, because they're playing Clemson too, so someone's going to beat each other up there, right?
Yep.
Awesome. 11-1, and we're in the ACC championship game.
You know what's funny? We did this live, and I didn't look ahead to the schedule, and I kept saying, "All right, well, there's at least 4 losses on here. I just got to pick the teams." I kind of want to go back. I just couldn't find any. Like, all these teams
it's really
are
not,
terrible.
Man.
So
yeah,
let me just call. We can't predict 11-1 after we just went 3-9 and lost 8 Flowers. You can't do that. We're going to lose to Louisville. We'll lose to Syracuse, and we go 9-3. All right?
Okay. Look, I think we could meet in the middle and call it 10-2, and we'd all be pretty happy with that.
That works for me, too. All right, 10-2. You heard it here first.
10-2.
And even 10-2 is not even, like, I can't believe how bad the schedule is. Maybe one of these teams will surprise us.
It's a terrible schedule.
There's also something to be said for if we're able to take care of the non-conference, and it all starts with Northern Illinois, which we should talk about. Yeah, just wow. Can't believe how easy this is.
Go into it. Give me your thoughts. You've done some Northern Illinois research.
This is like when in 2020, when NC State, like, they cooked up the easiest schedule possible for NC State, and they went 9-3, like, playing the easiest schedule ever. But yeah, let me pull up my Northern Illinois notes here. All right, so Northern Illinois. Spread is currently BC's favorite by 10.5. That seems like a ton of points. I don't think I'm going to take – I'm not going to lay 10.5 until I figure out what the O-line is. That's a live bet. I'm going to see our first few drives go, and then I think we'll know pretty quickly not only what we got that game, but this season. So Northern Illinois went 3-9 last year like us. Similar to us, it was due to injuries. The year before, they won the MAC, so it's not like this is a shitty program. The quarterback is named Rocky Lombardi, which is an 11 out of 10 on the intimidating quarterback name scale. That's all I got. Like I said, the opponent doesn't matter. If we have an O-line, we'll win. If we don't, we won't. It's sort of that simple this season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think if you trot out last year's team, this is a game that is a toss-up and, you know, could fall the negative way. So, like, if we are better than we were last year, which I think we all expect, we should be fine and we should win comfortably. But I agree with you that we'll know after the first quarter of how does the line look? How does the defense look? How does Moorhead look? What are we trying to do with this two quarterback system? If anything, we'll get a little bit of a read of like what this is all going to look like. But let me put it this way. If this is a game we come out, like a lot of times if you start with a, you know, a bad Division II opponent and, you know, like when we played Northeastern our freshman year and you looked awesome. I guess that year we did win 8 games, but like you can't really tell anything from it because it's like you're supposed to dominate these teams. This is still a Division I team. If we come out and we dominate and we look like a great football team, our line looks good, our receivers look good, Moorhead looks good, like that to me is going to be enough to inspire confidence throughout the rest of the way that these 10-2 and 11-1 predictions are not utterly ridiculous, especially with this schedule.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good barometer for the rest of the year. Just looking at that schedule, like most of our teams are going to be of similar skill talent. Northern Illinois will be on the lower end of that. But depending on what we do with Northern Illinois, whereas in years past, you typically get you know, you start out with the cupcakes and you don't really know what you got the first few years. This is a good enough team where I think we'll know. So looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. Was it a noon kick?
It is a noon kick on Labor Day Saturday.
I don't think I'm going, but we'll see how this week goes.
No, I will not be there. To be clear, I'm not going to be in attendance.
Yeah, I might fly up Friday or something stupid. We'll see.
That's crazy.
I know.
That's crazy. Look, you can only go to so many games a year. Don't waste it on this
one. Well, I got a couple of weddings during the key games, unfortunately. Like Florida State, I got a wedding. So
yeah.
If I'm going to make it up, I got to make an effort at some of these earlier games. Because all the, like, what is it, 4 out of the first 5 are home, something like that, like it usually is.
Yeah, you go week 1, week 2, week 3. Week 5,
mm-hmm.
And then you're only home 2 other times, 28th of October, or sorry, 1 in October, 1 in November, sorry,
and
1
Miami,
in October,
yeah.
2 in November. There you go. Yeah.
So, yeah, got to make it at least a couple early on, otherwise it goes quick. But
as always, as we start to win, right, like you get more of a reason to go up and like, you know, our friends collectively are like, oh, we should fly up for a game. Like,
yeah.
I think we'd collectively be, if we're sitting at whatever that number is, you know, 8-1 for the VaTech game, like we all collectively be like, oh yeah, we should go to that.
I agree. Unlike last year where we bought tickets to Notre Dame like 6 months in advance and then we were what, 2?
We knew it was going to suck.
Yeah. I didn't know it was going to be that bad, but
no,
new year, we're turning out over a new leaf and anything can happen. So, all right, that's all I got, Matt. That's all I got.
Likewise. Look, hey, this was a lot of fun. It was very unstructured. It was not the most research we've ever done. I hope people aren't listening to us for any, like, again, like I said, kind of hot-hitting or hard-hitting X's and O's takes. But, you know, we had some fun here, Matt. This was a nice little surprise, and hopefully, again, we'll see how the year goes. I would not expect this to be a weekly occurrence, but as the team does well, sometimes that brings even everyone out of retirement a little bit.
I can't believe we just predicted 10. I was not planning on doing it. I was thinking like 8-4. I just can't get there with this schedule.
I can't find it, Matt.
Yeah, can't find the losses.
All right. Well, anyways, guys, thanks for listening, everybody. Hopefully this is a fun season. I don't know. If it's not, like, hopefully we're numb from last year. That's at least how I feel about it. So, keep following us on Twitter. We'll try to be active there. Koozies, we'll probably get some koozies in the works, at least for the Army game. We got to have something for the boat.
I agree.
I don't know.
Totally agree. All right, guys. We'll talk to you all soon. Go Eagles. Get it.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.